stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. Monitoring groups in Syria are reporting at least 35 civilians have been killed by Turkish airstrikes. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish airstrikes, supported by artillery, attacked Syrian villages Sunday close to Turkey's border that were under the control of US-allied Kurdish militia. Turkish military officials say 25 Kurdish militia members were killed and denied there were any civilian fatalities. In the same statement, the military said it's committed to protecting civilians under international law. Fighting has escalated since Turkey launched its Syrian operation Wednesday. Turkey has admitted the death of its first soldier in the Syrian operation. The Kurdish military put a video on the internet showing Kurdish fighters celebrating after destroying two Turkish tanks with a rocket. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
U.S. Republican presidential contender Donald Trump is making repeated appeals for support from African American voters. At the unlikeliest of venues, rallies where almost all the voters are white. Trump has called Hillary Clinton, his Democratic opponent in the November 8th presidential election, a bigot for not improving the plight of blacks and Hispanics. National political surveys show Clinton has amassed a huge lead over Trump among black and Hispanic voters, the fastest growing segment of the American electorate, while he holds a much smaller lead among white voters. Please look at our website. You can access it at voanews.com. And this reminder that you are listening to VOA News. Italian officials have opened an investigation to focus on different structures that collapsed after Wednesday's powerful quake, devastating four towns in the mountainous heartland of the country and rattling the central agricultural regions. Regional public prosecutors say they will not only investigate why recently constructed public buildings failed to withstand the quake's force, but they're threatening also to file charges against private property owners who may have altered their houses in ways that breach current building codes and anti-seismic engineering regulations. Italy marked a day of national mourning Saturday for the nearly 300 people confirmed killed. Iran has arrested a member of a team that played a role in negotiating a milestone nuclear agreement with world powers. According to IRNA, Iran's state media, Judiciary spokesman Gholam Hossein Mosehni Ejeh said Sunday that a spy who had infiltrated the nuclear team was released on bail after being held in jail for a few days. The negotiator's identity was not disclosed, but Ejeh said he's still under investigation. Last year, Iran agreed to curb its nuclear program in exchange for relief from most global economic sanctions. The deal is opposed by many hardliners who view it as a concession to the United States. The impeachment trial of suspended Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff concluded a third day late Saturday with senators interrogating two witnesses called by the defense. The 68-year-old Rousseff is on trial for allegedly breaking fiscal rules in the administration of Brazil's federal budget. On Monday, Rousseff will address the senators. Pakistani officials said security forces have raided a madrasa in the southwestern city of Quetta and rounded up around 100 Afghan nationals for suspected links to militant groups. Provincial government spokesman Anwar ul Haq Kakar told VOA the detainees did not possess any identity documents. Authorities also seized undesired literature from the seminary known as Madrasa Abdullah bin Zubar. He said the institution has been sealed after the overnight raid in the Busa Mandi area, and detainees are being probed for further legal action. Combating terrorism will be a top agenda item when U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry makes his first official visit to Bangladesh, which is still reeling from the July 1st attack claimed by Islamic State at a Dhaka cafe. The siege left 20 hostages dead, 17 of them foreigners. Police in Bangladesh said Saturday they killed the suspected mastermind of the attack and two other militants during a raid on their hideout outside Dhaka. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We think that it is part of the ruling party's propaganda to try to shift the attention from the petition case.
The Zambian main opposition party calls on the International Criminal Court to send a team to investigate the ongoing post-election violence.
We are conducting an operation, an exercise program called Exercise Crocodile Smile. And this Crocodile Smile is aimed at refreshing the training of individuals, personnel of the armed forces.
The Nigerian military launches a new offensive against militants in the oil-producing Niger Delta region.
You cannot talk of removing your peace partner. He signed the peace agreement with Dr. Riek Machar to end the war. Now that he nearly killed him and Riek fled.
And the South Sudanese President Salva Kiir warns that any attempt to reinstate Dr. Riek Machar will prolong the country's war and worsen the plight of citizens. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambia's main opposition party, the United Party for National Development, or UPND, has called on the International Criminal Court, or the ICC, to send a team to the southern African country to investigate ongoing post-election violence. The party took the action after leaders of the UPND, including presidential candidate Hakainde Hichilema and vice presidential candidate Geoffrey Mwamba, were accused of committing several human rights violations after the August 11 general election and referendum. Charles Kakoma, spokesperson for the UPND, told me the ruling PF party is to blame for the ongoing post-election violence.
We think that it is part of the ruling party's propaganda to try to shift the attention from the petition case. The political violence that you have seen in Zambia in the past 2 years has been orchestrated by the ruling party, the Patriotic Front, and therefore, for them to turn around and shift the blame on the opposition is merely trying to divert attention. In fact, they've done a good job that they've decided to take that route because we've got documented evidence which we even earlier on in the years submitted to the Commonwealth of Nations complaining about violation of human rights and political violence and all that stuff. So it is just going to give us opportunity to go and prove to the ICC that Edgar Lungu and the Patriot Front in Zambia are brutalizing people, they are killing people, and they have got documents of people that have been killed.
Despite the report to the ICC, do you still welcome an official investigation by the ICC into this violence?
Yes. In fact, what should happen is that the ICC should have a fact-finding mission to Zambia and investigate this case. They will actually find out the culprits are different and not the one being reported.
Hakainde Hichilema asked for a meeting with President Lungu, and President Lungu was categorical in saying that unless Hakainde Hichilema renounces the violence allegedly perpetrated by supporters of the UPND, there's no need for a meeting. Has he done that? And if he hasn't done that, why is he still demanding or asking for a meeting to resolve some of these challenges?
Yes, because what is happening now is that a lot of our people are being beaten. A lot of them are being chased from their shops in the markets, from taxi ranks, and a lot of our people are having their houses burnt and so on. So we want to meet the president so that he gives a stop to this, because he is the commander-in-chief and the police are not doing anything to protect the other citizens, except those that are in the ruling party.
Are you saying that the president has failed his duty mandated under the constitution to protect life and property because of this ongoing violence? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, he has lamentably failed to do that because the police appear to be helpless. They say they cannot take action because the ruling party cadres appear to be more powerful than the police.
I understand the Law Association of Zambia has decided to throw its weight behind the UPND petition against the outcome of the presidential election. I understand that the court has thrown some aspect of your case out. What do you think are the prospects of the court ruling in your favor?
Well, to begin with, let me say that the allegations that they have thrown out some parts of our petition are not correct. Nothing like that has happened. It was just part of the public media propaganda by the ruling party. Nothing has been thrown out. And secondly, that the Law Association of Zambia has decided to back our petition, to join the petition, because they think that something has gone wrong in this election and needs to be corrected. And the Law Association, they need to do the right thing to protect the Constitution.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesperson for the Zambian opposition UPND. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Nigerian military said on Saturday it had launched a new offensive against militants in the oil-producing Niger Delta, killing 5 and arresting 23. The groups say they want a greater share of Nigeria's oil wealth to go to the impoverished region. Armed groups have claimed responsibility for a series of attacks on oil and gas pipelines in the southern region, reducing the country's oil output. Brigadier General Rabi Abubakar, Director of Defense Information, told me a special forces battalion moved against militant camps in an operation aimed at getting rid of all arms and criminals.
What is happening is, I believe they are just trying to raise an eyebrow, a necessary eyebrow for that matter. We are conducting an operation, an exercise for that matter, called Exercise Crocodile Smile. And this Crocodile Smile is aimed at refreshing, you know, the training of amphibious personnel of the armed forces. Remember, the negotiation is still on, going with the federal government and the militants. So the military is in total compliance, you know, with the directives of our respected political leaders. They have been in negotiation with them. Hence, the military cannot be seen and other security agencies doing anything contrary to what the politicians are doing. So the issue of saying we have launched an attack and we kill 5, all this and that, I believe they're not dreaming. So if there's any alarm, I think it's baseless, and what they are saying or claiming is may not likely to be true.
Is there any cooperation with those residents in the area in terms of intelligence gathering and protecting life and property, as well as protecting the oil infrastructure from being destroyed?
Honestly speaking, Mr. Peter, that's our expectation, because as Nigerians, we owe it a duty, you know, to ensure lives and property of both the innocent individuals, you know, the government infrastructure, especially the critical strategic assets of the government, such as pipelines, you know, other oil platforms there, you know, ought to have been protected by the military in liaison with the host community. The host community play a very important role, and that's what we have been advocating. Look, this is our country. We shouldn't be destroying. If there is any disagreement, follow the normal civility. Cannot have grievances in a more international accepted standard, okay? So give us information. These people, these guys are not ghosts. They are living within you. Give us information so they can term, you know, their activities. Okay, but honestly speaking, some of them have been very formidable, have been very helpful in this direction. And we continue to educate our citizens, not only in the Niger Delta, but any other part of the country, that look, information and intelligence is very, very important in about any agri incident. And I believe some of them have been cooperating, and more effort has to be geared towards like seeking their support and cooperation. That's what we're continuously doing.
What is the status of the military or the soldiers in these areas that have been threatened security-wise in the Niger Delta region? How alert are they?
Well, you see, honestly speaking, we're 100% on alert, even though there could be some challenges. But honestly speaking, all our troops anywhere in operations, be it in Niger Delta, be it in Northeast, be it in North Central, where we are conducting operation against cattle rustlers, be it in North Middle Belt and other places where we are conducting operations against headmen and farmer slashes, all these spot areas, our soldiers have been very, very active and have been very on alert to ensure that they contain the ongoing security threats against this country.
Brigadier General, before I let you go, let me ask you this. What should the people or the residents in the Niger Delta expect from the military, particularly when some of them have not been pleased with the military operation to push back these militants who have been destroying life and property there? What should they expect from the Nigerian military?
No. You see, we are Nigerians, and we are given the opportunity, to have received the lethal training to protect lives and property. So we are protecting the lives, including the lives of both the community leaders, the stakeholders there, and any other, including the militants themselves. It's our duty to do that. And principally, we are not going to be seen as troops of occupation. We should be seen as soldiers in progress, as Nigerians who are there to protect the interests of Nigeria. And the interest of Nigeria is supreme. It's uncompromising. And we will continue to ensure the protection of national assets and national interests of our country, no matter who is involved. And we cannot in any way do anything contrary to either dehumanize or to wreak unnecessary havoc on any individual or community.
Brigadier General Rabi Abubakar is the Director of Defense Information of the Nigerian Army. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir says the country's war could be prolonged if the international community continues with pressure to have former Affairs Vice President Dr. Riek Machar reinstated in the transitional government. Officials say President Kiir is opposed to diplomatic engagement to have Machar reinstated as the Affairs Vice President. But James Gadget Jack, spokesman for the Machar, told me President Kiir's statement demonstrates that he is disinterested in the implementation of the peace accord.
To us, it is a violation of the peace agreement. It is a comment from somebody who does not want to implement the peace agreement, because you cannot talk of, removing your peace partner. He signed the peace agreement with Dr. Riek Machar to end the war. Now that he nearly killed him and Dr. Riek fled, he should have asked, Dr. Riek Machar to come back to Juba, by also agreeing to the deployment of a third-party force so that the two can continue with the implementation of the peace agreement, if he is someone who is interested in the peace agreement.
There seems to be a split on the international front, because there are some diplomatic efforts engaging President Salva Kiir to bring back Dr. Riek Machar. However, IGAD said something different. The U.S. government is saying something different, that the removal of Dr. Riek Machar as the SPLM-IO leader in the transitional government is legal. Where does Dr. Riek Machar stand at the moment?
Well, what we knew was that the IGAD had a communique which called for Taban Dengai to step down, and also the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution which described the illegal replacement in Juba as inconsistent with the peace agreement. So this is how we see the international community. But if there are, some countries within the region who think to take the opinion of President Salva Kiir not to work with Dr. Riek Machar, this is what we have not yet officially received. What we have as documents is the communique, which calls for reinstatement of Dr. Riek Machar and stepping down of Taban Dengai, and which was echoed also by the United Nations. There are individual countries within the region who want, to agree with Salva Kiir that he should remove his peace partner. This is yet to be received officially from IGAD.
Some officials in the government that I spoke with are of the view that Taban Dengai is cooperating fully with President Salva Kiir to implement the peace agreement, and they said that it appears that Dr. Riek Machar has not been willing or does not want to work with President Salva Kiir. What do you say to such criticism?
Well, This is not true. The difference between the two now, according to Salva Kiir, is that Dr. Riek Machar wants the peace agreement to be implemented, while Thabane Ndhaye, on the other hand, wants to surrender to Salva Kiir. This is what he calls cooperation. But it is not cooperation. It is a surrender so that the peace agreement can be dismantled willingly by the two of them. So it is not a cooperation. And how can they achieve peace when Dr. Riek Machar is now fully in control of the army, is fully in control of the political leadership of the SPLM-IO? This is not a peace that can be achieved in such a way. The only way to achieve peace is to implement the peace agreement, which Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar signed in August last year. This is how the peace can be achieved. Otherwise, what they call cooperation is the fact that Thabane Ndhaye has surrendered. As you have seen, we were ready to compete for the position of the speakership of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly because we wanted that seat so that if our official passed or won the election in the parliament and became the speaker of the parliament, this would have been easier for us to push for the reforms which the country needs at the moment. But Thabane Ndhaye surrendered that golden chance. He just told Salva Kiir that he was not interested.
What is the current health status of Dr. Riek Machar at the moment?
Well, he's okay. He has recovered. Actually, he suffered from extreme exhaustion because he was in the wilderness being hunted down by President Salva Kiir's forces. Fortunately, he crossed into DRC, Congo, where he was rescued. So after the exhaustion, he has now recovered gradually, but he's still following up with the treatment in Kabul.
James Gadet Dak is the spokesman for the deposed South Sudanese First Vice President. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Meanwhile, Sudanese civil society and women rights activists say many laws and regulations restricting the rights of women and girls in Sudan make it almost impossible to achieve the United Nations' Sustainable Development Goals of empowering women and gender equality. At a forum in Khartoum, rights activists said Sudan needs a comprehensive political, legal and social overhaul to achieve gender equity. For VOA, Nabil Biagio has more from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The Gender Center for Research and Training hosted its third forum in Khartoum on how to end violations against Sudanese women. Panelists at the forum discussed provisions in Sudanese laws that legal experts say clearly discriminate against women, including the Muslim Personal Law Act of Sudan, 1991, which says the contract of marriage for a woman shall be concluded by a male guardian, confer different rights in marriage for men and women, and mandate wife obedience. There is also the Public Order Act of 1991, which governs how women should dress and conduct themselves in public. Legal expert Amala Zain, a panelist at the forum, says most of these laws were designed to control women and punish them according to a strict interpretation of Sharia law.
Some of the recommendations call for the abolishment of all the legislation that restricts rights and freedom and discriminate against women. It's very important that we do away with all the laws and regulations that violate women's rights to work, to move, and to connect with the world around them.
As Zain says, women must look for national lawmakers in government who are willing to defend their rights.
It's very important that we communicate with the decision makers and raise their awareness so that they consider gender equality in their decisions and respond to the needs of women. A lot of the problems that women face in Sudan have to do with lack of equal access to education and healthcare for women.
As Zain says, women and girls in Sudan must have equal access to education to men and boys so they know their rights and stand up for them. Activist Khadija Dweihi, who attended the forum, points out that young people between the age of 18 and 35 make up the largest population group in Sudan and will play a major role in bringing about social change.
From what we discussed today, we need a lot of work to achieve the sustainable development goals. These goals will never be realized unless the youth work hard to mobilize society and especially women, in addition to enacting policies that preserve their rights.
Ni'mat Kuku is a team leader at the Gender Center for Research and Training. She says the official avenues for claiming women's rights in Sudan are closed because government officials are not willing to support their cause.
The only mechanism now in Sudan is the Commission of Human Rights, and it is pro the government rather than to be independent. It looks like it is a waste of time for the civil society to have, say, alternative legal frameworks and to advocate for them, unless we talk about what is the second step, how we can deal with comprehensive change with our own mechanism as a civil society.
Kuku says Sudanese women's rights activists must unite and work collaboratively with various social groups to achieve gender equality in all sectors of public and private life.
Say women forums, say youth forum, say civil society forums should take these initiatives and start to promote their frameworks, alternative frameworks and mechanism to advocate for change.
The journey ahead will be long and difficult, says Kuku, but she believes real change is within reach. She says she hopes women will demand some of the rights and freedoms they won in the early years of Sudan's independence, which they later lost in 1991, and under governments that employed different versions of Sharia law. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Two women traveling in a minibus were dragged out and burned by a mob Wednesday in the town of Butembo in eastern Congo, where other travelers have narrowly escaped lynching in the past week. Some observers say politicians are partly to blame for heightened community tensions in the DRC's North Kivu province. For VOA, Nick Long has more from Goma.
The two women, both aged over 50, were the latest victims of a cycle of violence between the Nande and Hutu ethnic communities in North Kivu. Butembo is an overwhelmingly Nande town, and recently the North Kivu parliament, dominated by Nande, passed an edict restricting travellers from the south, who are mainly Hutu, from entering the town. Vigilantes set up roadblocks to intercept travellers they claimed were suspect. Kayendo Esperance, a student, was one of the other passengers on the bus on Wednesday and saw what happened to the two women.
Ils ont vérifié ce que les deux femmes là portaient comme bagage. Ils ont trouvé de machettes et autres.
She says the men at the roadblock checked what the two women were carrying in their bundles and found machetes. Then they told them to speak Kinande, the local language in Butembo, and they couldn't, so they decided they were Hutu. She confirmed the two women, both in their 50s, were then burnt to death. The police tried to intervene, she says, but the population refused to listen to them. The young vigilantes claimed they were trying to intercept terrorists of the ADF rebel group, who are blamed for massacring hundreds of people in Beni, north of Butembo, since 2014. The vice-governor of North Kivu province, Fele Lutahichiwa, has spent the past few days in Butembo and told local radio this ethnic violence has claimed six lives in the city in the past week and several other people have been injured. He says the crimes committed by these young people were the result of false information confusing the ADF terrorists with people migrating from the south of the province towards Ituri in the north. 57 people have been arrested in connection with the violence in Butembo.
La justice va sanctionner avec la plus grande rigueur, mais entre temps,
strict justice will be meted out, he says, and meanwhile the governor's order restricting movement from the south will remain in force until the situation has calmed down. Fazil Mugabo, a Hutu and activist with the UDC political party, told VOA this restriction on free movement is unconstitutional and is mainly targeting Kinyarwanda speakers.
Le mouvement de cette population, ça ne peut pas être à la base des troubles qui se font.
People travelling from the south can't be at the root of these troubles, he says. They're just travelling on business. What's causing it is political manipulation, which has got to stop, he says. The vigilantes in Butembo were out in force since last Sunday in defiance of a curfew ordered by the governor. Charlene Soki, a young Nande, told VOA she saw them being mobilized by a politician. She says she saw a deputy, a member of the local parliament, telling young men to go into the streets at night. She doesn't know his name, she says, but she heard he was not from the ruling coalition. He was from the opposition. Fazil Mugabo commented that as the time for elections draws near, certain politicians are playing the ethnic card to mobilise support. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with football. Samson Siasia, who coached Nigeria's men's football team to a bronze medal at the Rio Olympics, is quitting the game in his country because of what he describes as a disrespectful system. Siasia, the most decorated African football coach at the Olympics, having also won a silver medal in Beijing in 2008, claims to have gone unpaid for 5 months by his employers, the Nigerian Football Federation. He says he has quit football in Nigeria after a turbulent and incredible campaign in Brazil. Before arriving in Rio, Nigeria's Dream Team 6 were held in Atlanta, USA, because of a problem with the payment for their flight, and they only landed in Brazil just hours before the opening 5-4 win over Japan. Nigeria also had a troubled build-up to their quarter-final against Denmark after the players boycotted a training session in a dispute over pay. Amid all the problems that blighted their campaign, the team showed courage under adversity to clinch the country's only medal at the Rio Games. In the African Champions League, Wydad Casablanca of Morocco earned the point they needed away to ZESCO United of Zambia to finish top of Group A. The two sides drew 1-1 in Indola on Wednesday, with Kenyan David Owino giving ZESCO the lead after 16 minutes. Nigerian Chrisom Chikatara scored the crucial equaliser for Wydad's side 10 minutes after half-time. The result means a Northern African semi-final between Wydad and Egypt's Zamalek after they finished as runners-up in Group B. The other semi-final will be a Southern African affair, with ZESCO taking on Group B winners Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa. Also on Wednesday, it ended goalless draw between ASEC Mimosas of Ivory Coast and visiting Al Ahly of Egypt in a match that was meaningless, with both sides having already been eliminated. Nigeria's Enyimba finished off their African Champions League campaign with a 3-1 win over South African side Mamelodi Sundowns on Tuesday. The result restored a certain amount of pride for Enyimba, who had already missed out on the chance of reaching the semi-finals. Despite the loss, South African champion Sundowns had already done enough to finish top of Group B and seal a place in the last four. Egypt's Zamalek finished as runners-up in a group reduced three sides after the disqualification of Algeria's Entente Satif. Elsewhere in Africa, Sierra Leone have set up a week-long training camp in Accra, Ghana, to avoid pressure from home fans as they prepare for their 2017 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Ivory Coast. The Group 1 match will take place in Ivorian city Bouake on September 3rd, and Sierra Leone need to win to qualify for the tournament for the first time in 20 years. Ivory Coast need only a draw to secure the chance to defend their title in January's finals in Gabon. The Sierra Leone Football Association says the 16 home-based players in the 30-man provisional squad, selected by coach Tete, are already in Accra and are expected to play several warm-up games against Ghanaian top-flight league clubs. finally, in athletics, Bahrain's Ruth Jebet, who also won gold in Rio, ran 8 minutes, 52.78 seconds to set a 3,000 meters steeplechase world record on a night of eye-catching distance performances in Paris, the 12th stop of the IAAF Diamond League Series on Saturday. The Kenyan-born 19-year-old smashed the previous record of 8 minutes, 58.81 seconds, set by Russian Gulnara Galkina at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Jebet has now run 3 of the 4 fastest times in history. Also, Laura Muir broke her own British 1500 meters record by more than 2 seconds to win at the Diamond League meeting in Paris. The Scot clocked 3 minutes, 55.2 seconds to break the national record for the second time in 5 weeks and set a 2016 world best time. Muir beat Olympic champion Faith Kipyegon into second place, with the Kenyan running 3 minutes, 56.72 seconds. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent to enjoy.
Mungu anawaona, Mungu anawaona. Ukimnyang'anya maskini kidogo alicho nacho, ukaongezea kwenye kikubwa ulicho nacho. Mungu anakuona, imani ila kuona. Atokiwa mtenda mabaya, ukirudisha moyo wako nyuma, anasamehe na kusahau. Mungu ni wa ajabu, ajabu.
natamani kuwa msani nyota Mungu anakuona ulifeli masomo yako Mungu anakuona uko mtaani maisha magumu Mungu anakuona sende mcheda na mufaya wa kitaa
Mungu hamtupi mtu mwenye dhamira ya kweli. Hawezi shindwa, hawezi kata tamaa.
One day boom boom. One day malila. One day ngumu. One day malila. Yeah 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 yeah. Yeah 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 yeah. Ni kama nililuka majivu na kukanyaga moto. Matusi na kunifadhesha kawa malipo ya pendo langu kwako Mbele za watu nikapiga goti Nikaweka pete ya uchumba kwenye kidole chako Umbo likuwa chupa ukanga Kwenye jua kali nikadhana almasi kakupenda kwa kasi Baby I don't wanna waste my time Change heart Once is a Kakazeva Mutali Kataki Lanina. Kataki Lanina. I fall out. Yeah, 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 yeah. Kumbe atachina lake nilidanganywa. Nikachiona mino ninapendwa na siwezi achwa. Mwanamke mjinga tajiri ndoa yake kwa mikono yake. Ye mwenyewe, ye mwenyewe Mwana umemjinga taikunja doa yake kwa mikoro yake Ye mwenyewe, ye mwenyewe Kwa kuzi ya minisi ya za Nika kukabithi moyo wangwe fola Kudhani ya siku moja In a way, itafunga ndoa I fall out Ay, 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 ay Ah Itakutafuta limilipe chapo Teluthi ya wema wako Jicho lako la wema kwangu Limekwa deni Moyoni mwangu Tiwezi kukufua wema na kukulipa mabaya Kwa kosa moja Siwezi kukuvua wema na kukulipa mabaya Kwa kosa moja Yale maumivu uliyonipa Nimesha yasahau Kumbe hata jina lake nilidanganywa Nikajiona mino ninapendwa na siwezi achwa Tajinyo doa yake kwa mikoro yake Ye mwenyewe Ye mwenyewe Mwana umemjinga Tajinyo doa yake kwa mikoro yake Ye mwenyewe Ye mwenyewe
Baby I don't wanna waste my time Change how you feel If you don't want me Someone will
I don't wanna waste my time Change how you feel If you don't want me Someone will
Kumbe atachina lake Atachina lake Nikachiona mino ninapendwa na siwezi achwa
Ninapendwa siwezi achwa
Mwanamke mjinga tajinyo yake Kwa mikoro yake Ye mwenyewe
Kwa mikoro yake
Ye mwenyewe
Ndoa yake mwenyewe
Mwanaume mjinga tajinyo yake
Something
kanebera karanga na miyoko mibichi mama we kisha ulipame onda na jangu piga kiki mama we nidonoshe na mbata na pweza wake mjuzi mama we tupate toto furani we fiti kajifiti mama we mama ni chumu mama Shushe, wasio na haya Na wala usisumbuke Wajibu vibaya Jiamini mwanamke Waukuni wewe faya Wamezaliwa Kutusema sisi Achana nao Hawo Ibada yao Kutusema sisi Wasikuchanganye Hawo Tunituni sana Kwa malefu na mapana Sisi twasimama Kwa tabaki kuchutama Tulitulizana Kwa malefu na mapana Sisi twasimama Kwa tabaki kuchutama
Waka kukuche, kukuche, kukuche Mapenzi yangu kuonyesha kwako Waka kukuche Lata nizikwe, nizikwe, nizikwe Mapenzi yangu kusimama kwako Lata nizikwe Paka kukuche, kukuche, kukuche Mapenzi yangu kuonyesha kwako paka kukuche Lata nizikwe, nizikwe, nizikwe Mapenzi yangu kusimama kwako lata nizikwe
Ikikishamba kidogo Na kilimaga mwenyewe Wata walete zogo Watajijua wenyewe ma mwenye komba kai poleni na mwenye komba kai chini
lazima funge kibwebwe atambe aonyeshe mwembwe
mwenye bomba kai poleni na mwenye ngoma kai chini
lazima funge kibwebwe atambe aonyeshe mwembwe
kama jeshi kitambo mwasemaje mugambo mimi bwana mipango sizifate zangu nyayo kama jeshi kitambo wasemaje mugambo Mimi bwana mipango sizifate zangu nyayo
Mwanzo walisema nisifanani na wewe Wakatupa na majina we kunguru na mimwewe Sasa siku zinapita tunapenda na wenyewe Sasa siku zinapita tumeshiba na wenyewe We na mimi kwani kama mvuli na mvue Nisitiri mami kune nisije kuroe
Chupa chupani Wana pachu pachu Benzile tona kwa chupa chuwai Wana pachu pachu Benzile tona kwa chupa chupani
Waka kukuche, kukuche, kukuche Mapenzi yangu kuonyesha kwako Waka kukuche Lata nizikwe, nizikwe, nizikwe Mapenzi yangu kusimama kwako Lata nizikwe Waka kukuche, kukuche, kukuche Mapenzi yangu kuonyesha kwako paka kukuche Lata nizikwe, nizikwe, nizikwe Mapenzi yangu kusimama kwako lata nizikwe
Uma baby nisambaziera, nisambaziera Nisambaziera, kwenye penzi mama niwe kichani
Nisambaziera, nisambaziera Nisambaziera, nipagawe mama niwe kichani Nisambaziera
The VOA Turita Sarima, Sarima wo Najua maisha yako yaliyumba pale ulipo wapoteza Wazazi wako
Salima na gusanze ya surika gunga wekuye tenga jinyenya Salima cheni sande uya yende Leso mina umwenge Salima mili sande yule yule Ili ya somara we mwenge Sima ya yuka na tosako Uliza kuwa na za Salima Salima zako na kupenda Salima na zaka ni wako Salima na wale tujatenga Salima zaka wa watata wako Salima zaka na kupenda Salima Kuwa kama yale ya mwanawe afinawe usijikatie tamaa kuna wengi wanashinda kuliko zako sama wanaamini kupitia ule msemo walidhikia mbavu miguuni pake wanaamini kupitia ule msemo walidhikia mbavu saba sana
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. It is incredible to believe that President Pierre Nkurunziza of Burundi and his close advisors are contemplating a measure that would definitely deepen the political and security crisis in his country. Just a few months and years ago, the Burundi peace agreement was signed, and the people of Burundi were living with some degree of security and political stability. Then this was all changed by the idea of prolonging the stay of the president way beyond what was contemplated in the Arusha Accord. The president and his advisors interpreted the agreement by saying that it should start with the conclusion of the agreement and therefore he needs one more term in power. This decision created turmoil in the country. It led to an outflow of refugees and many Burundians have been killed and still being killed, and the political turmoil continues. How then, in these circumstances, is the government hoping to solve the problem by coming out with a new proposal? It has been reported that the Inter-Burundi Commission, which was started by the government, would soon recommend that the parliament adopt a position to remove term limit in Burundi. This will only cause more severe problem in the country. Perhaps the government thought that their initial step going beyond the Arusha Accord was met with feeble response from the United Nations, from the African Union, and the regional group. And therefore, they are now going to go foot hog. But this is a very dangerous step to take. What is also tragic is that Burundi lies in a region where the issue of time limit is highly problematic, beginning with Uganda, Rwanda, now in Burundi, and soon in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The response of the international community should be very firm if the government of Burundi come out with this proposal to remove the time limit in the country. This is not something which the Security Council or the African Union should tolerate. So it must be made clear to them that any action of that type will be met with firm response from the international community. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. I hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Michael Dubinsky, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, two men quarreling do not share the same seat on a canoe. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Syria is one of the cradles of civilization, a place where humans first learned to live together in towns and cities. The societies that flourished in Syria mastered technologies including farming, pottery making, metalworking, and glassblowing, creating many beautiful artifacts. From the remains of immense Bronze and Iron Age settlements to extensive Greek and Roman cities, mighty fortresses and castles and masterpieces of art and architecture, these societies have produced some of the ancient world's most spectacular cultural treasures. Syria is home to 6 of UNESCO's World Heritage Sites, and another 12 have been nominated for inclusion. Today, these priceless antiquities are disappearing. Some have fallen victim to the country's 5-year civil war. But the greatest threat to these irreplaceable historic artifacts is ISIL, also known as Daesh. Over the past 2 years or so, while they controlled large parts of northern and eastern Syria, these terrorists have deliberately and ostentatiously destroyed some of the most significant archaeological treasures created by the ancients in Palmyra, Tell el-Jaja, in Mary, and dozens of other historical sites. But beyond their purposeful destruction, ISIL terrorists have also done a tremendous amount of pillaging, looting, and just plain theft. They plundered sites and territories they controlled, digging up millennia-old artifacts and selling them on the black market. The United States is committed to helping the Syrian people preserve their priceless heritage and to preventing these thieves of history from profiting from their theft and the destruction they have wrought. For that reason, the United States has, in early August, imposed strict import restrictions on archaeological and ethnological material of Syria, effective immediately. Pursuant to the Protect and Preserve International Cultural Property Act of 2016, these emergency import restrictions apply to any cultural property unlawfully removed from Syria on or after March 15, 2011. The United States will continue to closely monitor and raise awareness about threats to heritage in Syria and work toward preventing its removal or destruction. We owe this to the Syrian people, who are being stripped of their cultural identity, as well as to the world at large that respects, admires, and studies this heritage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.